Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Bennington, Vermont. This talk, delivered on Sunday, January 14, 2024, is by the Reverend Barbara Threet on the topic of But Who's to Blame?
The sermon this morning is about blame. Who's at fault? Who's responsible? And by implication, who's not at fault and who's innocent? Who started this conflict? What incident caused that war? What set off the chain of events that resulted in this business going under, or that marriage ending, or this political party gaining power? What's behind the recent rise in COVID? Or the current situation in the Middle East? And it actually is a heated discussion in an interfaith group that I'm part of about who's to blame for the Middle East that sparked this sermon. Someone or something must be to blame for each of those things. A Hindu story to begin our reflections. Once there was a king who regularly distributed food to the Brahmins, the priests. One day, as the king was giving out food, an eagle flew overhead, holding a dead snake in its claws. Out of the mouth of the dead snake fell a drop of poison, and it landed unnoticed in the food that the king was distributing. No one saw this happening, so the king continued to generously distribute the food. The Brahmin who accidentally got the poison food died on the spot, and the king felt very sad about the sudden death that had happened while he was serving food, although, of course, nobody had any idea what had caused it. Now, the god of death, who has the responsibility of distributing karma to all living beings, had a problem. Obviously, such a sudden and dramatic and unexpected death must be someone's fault. When this incident with the king and the poisoned food happened, he didn't know whose fault it was, though, so he didn't know who to give the bad karma to. Someone had died unnecessarily, so someone must have caused it, and someone had earned bad karma, but who? After all, it was not the eagle's fault that it carried a dead snake in its claws, since that was its food. It wasn't the dead snake's fault, because it had no control over the poison. The gland or poison just fell out of its glands once it was dead. And it wasn't the king's fault, because he did not know that the poison had fallen into the food. And still, someone had died. It was a real dilemma. Who is to blame? One day, a short while later, a few other Brahmins came to meet with the king. A person was sitting next to the road, and the Brahmins asked, "Do you know where the king's palace is and how we can get there?" The person replied, "Yes, it's over that way." And then he whispered, "But be very careful. A Brahmin recently died after being fed by the king. It might be dangerous for you to go there." The moment the person said that and criticized the king unfairly, the god of death decided what to do. He gave that person, who had implied something that was not true, all the karma of killing the Brahmin. The moral of the story, according to the Hindus, is that if you criticize anyone and you are right about their deeds, then you get half of their bad karma for daring to criticize. But if you criticize someone and you are not right at all about their deeds, then you get all of their bad karma. So ends the Hindu story. That impulse to find someone to blame, someone who must be the cause of some difficulty, is a very old one and a very common one. It's why we so often hear about people, too often young black men, being found guilty of crimes that it later becomes clear they did not commit at all. There was a public outcry to find someone to blame, and that individual served the purpose. In the story of the king, someone died unexpectedly, so someone must be to blame for it, even if they're completely unconnected to what happened. Someone has to pay to reset the balance, and then life can move on. We found someone to blame, so now things are all set right again. That urge to find someone else to bear the responsibility for whatever wrong we do is just as old. There's a 4,000-year-old Hittite tablet found in Turkey that tells of a ritual to purify the king and queen of all of their misdeeds. A bull is presented to the priest on behalf of the king and a cow on behalf of the queen. And then there's a ceremony during which the officiant declares, "Whatever evil word or false oath, curse, or impurity has been committed in the sight of the deity by these two, may these animals take them all. May the king and queen be purified of all these things." And almost magically, the animals now carry the blame for whatever the king or queen did. And when they're driven out into the desert or slaughtered or whatever happens, now the blame is gone and everything is set right again. In Leviticus 16, in what the Christians refer to as the Old Testament, there is a description for the Day of Atonement, or Yom Kippur. Then Aaron shall lay both his hands upon the head of a live goat and confess over it all the iniquities of the Israelites and all their transgressions and all their sins, putting them on the head of the goat and sending it away into the wilderness by means of someone designated for that task. The goat shall bear on itself all their iniquities to a barren region. And then the goat shall be set free in the wilderness. That's actually the origin of the term of scapegoat, someone who carries all the things and then goes away. We humans look for blame. We want somebody else to take the responsibility and hopefully take it away. We seek someone or something to pin our misdeeds on. We want to know who we can hold responsible in a way that will set things right. Occasionally, life really is that simple. Someone broke something valuable, whether it was intended or not, so the one who broke it must fix it or pay restitution. Or you borrowed something from a friend, a book perhaps, and you lost it and now you'll need to replace it. It's clear who's to blame. But most of the time, establishing blame is more complicated. The idea that some one person or event must be the cause of any difficulty, even if they're not directly connected at all to what happened, is a very old one. The idea that it's acceptable to pin the blame on someone who obviously can't be responsible for whatever dreadful thing happened is a really old one, too. The Hindu story is probably a couple thousand years old. And we all know in our current judicial system, as I mentioned, there's often an outcry to find someone to blame, so someone is blamed, even tried and incarcerated, sometimes put to death, and then we find out that, in fact, they weren't the person to blame. The result from such thing is that a city can relax, believing that a crime has been resolved. And a person who is innocent of a particular crime is incarcerated. And most dangerous, the person who really is responsible goes free, quite liking feeling empowered to reoffend. The rush to blame, in fact, sometimes leaves our communities less safe. It short circuits any further investigation and provides a dangerous illusion of safety while actually making things worse. We're often determined to discover who's to blame in order to reassure ourselves that what happened is not our fault. The car is low on gas. Well, you were supposed to fill it. My favorite team lost. It can't be that my team didn't play well. The umpire was biased, or the ref made a lousy call, or the coach is cheating somehow, or the other team plays dirty. There must be some reason, and it can't be that my team didn't play well. That urge to establish who's to blame happens repeatedly, especially when we crave a single, simple answer. Take the quagmire in the Middle East, which seems to be getting worse. Depending on who you ask, the attack by Hamas is entirely to blame for the current situation, or it's entirely due to the provocation of the Jewish settlements so near or within Palestinian lands. We could blame centuries of anti-Semitism, or the lingering impact of Israelis expelling 700,000 Palestinians back in 1948, and there are Palestinians still alive who remember that. We could blame those who are supplying arms to Palestine, that being Iran, or those who are supplying arms to Israel, that being the U.S. We could talk about the long animosity between Saudi Arabia and Iran. In the last week, we could talk about Hezbollah and the Houthis. The list of who might be to blame goes on. There is plenty of blame to go around, covering decades and even centuries of history. It is appealing to think that there might be some one cause, and if we could only agree on that cause and fix it, then that would be the end of this conflict. Except it's not that simple. One of the problems with trying to isolate one thing to blame or even a few things to blame is that whatever the situation is, it rarely arises from one cause and one cause alone. The human condition is summarized brilliantly in our seventh principle on that back wall, the interdependent web. No, almost nothing is a standalone event. It's all interwoven. So isolating one single cause for anything can be complicated. Further, even if we could find a single cause, or even a few specific causes that happened a week or many centuries ago, that probably wouldn't change what's happening now at all. So why the determination to figure out who's to blame? Sometimes figuring out where things went wrong really does help to clarify whose responsibility this task really is. Who is supposed to refill the gas tank? Sometimes it helps us to establish a different way to handle a problem so that it might not go amiss in the future. But very often the rush to assign blame is a way to avoid personal responsibility or even to establish someone else's culpability. If I can make a case that you're to blame, then I'm not at fault. And if I can persuade you to agree that you're to blame, even if I know that I'm at fault, then I'm really off the hook. I don't have to feel guilty, and I don't have to do anything about the problem. It's become your responsibility. I didn't cause it now. You're to blame. You might even have agreed so. So I can throw up my hands and walk away. Sometimes we seek to establish blame to clear ourselves. Often blaming someone else just results in their becoming more defensive as they try to shift the blame still somewhere else. And then while we're arguing about who's to blame, nothing at all gets done about the problem itself. I think about the horror of school shootings. There were over 500 in 2023. Is the problem too many guns? Or not enough guns? Should teachers be armed? Do we need more security officers in schools, or do they just exacerbate the situation? Is the problem that there aren't enough efforts to stop bullying? Or is it parents who leave their guns where they can be accessed? Or administrations who don't respond to warnings? Those are all important questions, of course, and they're worth asking. But it often seems that in the rush to establish who's to blame, what happens is that each of those parties points at someone else and says, no, it's your fault. What gets lost is the reality of so many school kids dead and so many thousands left fearful. Using so much energy to establish who's to blame isn't really helpful. The parents blame the school or the cops, and the cops blame the gun laws, and the schools blame the parents, and the kids blame the schools, and so on, and it goes round and round and round. And it's hard for anyone to say, maybe I have part of that. Maybe I am responsible for a little bit of it. Actively seeking for answers rather than rushing to point the finger at who else is to blame might help the situation. If each of those groups could take some tiny bit of responsibility, it might make a difference. Being willing to question the accepted wisdom about all sorts of things, a healthy dose of doubt about what's been tried and what hasn't worked, might leave room to consider new ideas. At the very least, if we stopped blaming so quickly, it could break the sense of the cycle of defensiveness. When you're the one who's blamed, you're quickly saying, no, no, it's you, and then nothing's moving forward, and the situation only grows worse. Often putting so much energy into deciding who's to blame allows us to avoid acknowledging how complicated a situation is. The Middle East, the onslaught of school shootings, even COVID coming back over and over, it's almost impossible to figure out what could end and solve each of those situations. And it's hard for us humans to grapple with situations that cause so much angst and pain and seem so impossible to interrupt or untangle. We really want to simplify things. We dearly want some sort of an answer. And so often we turn to blame. Often all it accomplishes is for everyone to get really entrenched in trying to prove that their opinion is right and all the others are wrong. An eye for an eye, as I think it's Gandhi who said, just leaves the whole world blind. Rather than figuring out what might restore sight, we too often just poke out more eyes. Blame often gets extended in situations that are beyond anything that humans can address or affect. The natural disasters that have been ascribed to people having displeased God come to mind. Events from Noah's mythical flood, which was a punishment of those sinful people, to the Black Plague, the Lisbon earthquake in 1755, Countless droughts and fires and wars and other events have elicited sermons and tirades that these were God's punishment for the sins of the people and their abandonment of God's ways. I heard some of those rumblings after the Loma Prieta earthquake in California in 1989. Surely that was God's punishment for the hedonistic lifestyle of so many Californians. It amazes me how some of those voices that were saying that are so quiet when it comes to what's causing all of the floods and such things in the Midwest. It amuses me. People have done that forever, though. They've said that God caused this response to people behaving badly. So all we humans have to do is behave better, and then the problem will be solved. We are to blame, but we can fix it. We can make a sacrifice or do some ritual or pledge to stop drinking or go to church or whatever, and then all will be well. God will be happy and leave us alone. Except it's not that simple. None of those things, including evil people, caused an earthquake, no matter what religious or political leaders say. And it's really hard to accept that dreadful things like earthquakes and droughts and floods just happen. Sometimes even self-blame is easier than accepting that there really is no why. The problem with self-blame is its own topic, probably its own sermon, but at the very least, taking all the blame on ourselves as humans can result in not addressing any other aspect of the situation. God is punishing us by sending this earthquake, but we won't even talk about building earthquake-resistant structures. Self-examination with an eye toward what we might change in ourselves and how we might shift the situation is often helpful. Beating ourselves up, blaming ourselves, and stopping there is rarely useful. I find it helpful when considering a topic like blame to imagine what the polar opposite of it would be. What defines an alternative to aim for? If I'm thinking about cruelty or unkindness, aiming for kindness and generosity instead. For blame? Perhaps the opposite is taking personal responsibility, admitting our own role or our own biases. But there's another opposite to blame which I think is just as common, maybe more so, and that's accepting uncertainty, even chaos. Blame often imagines that there is a single cause and that isolating that cause will tell us how to eliminate the problem. And sadly, most of life is simply not that simple. As our seventh principle reminds us, we live in an interdependent web, each part of life connected to other parts. Almost nothing stands in isolation. No action, no person, no country, no political stance or dilemma. They're all affected by each other and affect other things too. I think of John Donne's words. You probably know them maybe by heart. No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the man. If a cloud be washed away by the sea, Europe is the less, as well as if a promontory were, as well as if a manor of thy friends or thy own were. Any man's death diminishes me because I am involved in mankind, and therefore never send to know for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee, whatever the bell is. I go back to the current situation in the Middle East, the one that sparked these thoughts. The truth is that it is Hamas that caused the current situation, and it also is the provocation of the Jewish settlements on Palestinian land. The violence there is the result of Israelis expelling 700,000 Palestinians 75 years ago and the lingering animosity that that bred. And it also is the result of centuries of anti-Semitism and the Holocaust and the resistance to a two-state option. The current crisis is the result of those who despise Israel and would love to see it disappear. And just as much, it is the result of those who despise Palestinians and would love to see them disappear. As the situation worsens, fault spreads. The Houthis, the Hezbollah, the antagonism which is centuries, decades old between the Saudis and the Iranians, it's all of those things and many, many more. The situation is the consequence of hundreds and probably thousands of other causes. Insisting there's one single source to blame or acknowledging a few factors while trying hard to discount every other factor is proving nonproductive. For many parties to admit and own the responsibility might make a difference. For each party to acknowledge the pain and rage of others might help. Interrupting practices that leave hundreds of thousands at risk of starvation might help. Calling for a ceasefire instead of increasing aggression might help. But trying to fix the finger of blame firmly on the other guy in a situation this complicated accomplishes nothing except deepening the lines of hatred and mistrust and defensiveness, causing more retribution and animosity and violence. I think of Israel's determination to extinguish Hamas, and I understand, given what happened on October 7th, why they might feel that way. It also seems very difficult for me to imagine that what's happening in Palestine will do anything less than cause several generations more of anger that's like what they've experienced Hamas. It's not helping. That's probably just as true on a much simpler level. Each of us brings our own perspective, our own history, our own hopes and fears to every situation. Each of us views the world through a lens of our own experiences, no matter how we try or don't try to understand another person, and each of us has our own prejudices. Life just is inherently complex, full of contradictions and uncertainties. Our challenge as individuals, as countries, as churches and neighborhoods is to figure out how to move forward in this process called life. Too often, blame keeps us focused on unraveling the past rather than moving forward. It can even stall us. Having decided who's to blame, we don't have to think about the problem anymore. We can assume that all the work is done. There's always more to life, always some factor that we don't know, usually many factors that we can't possibly know. One of the things I value most about being a UU is our willingness, at least sometimes, to embrace the ambiguities in life, to avoid seeking for easy answers or quick certainties. The illusion of assigning blame allows us to avoid how messy life is and how intertwined and confusing and even contradictory our lives and this planet are. Blame allows us to decide that this solves the problem rather than trying to seek out and integrate new information. And often blame just heightens alienation. So what might help in our own lives and maybe in our world? Looking for ways to admit and accept our own responsibility. Seeking out ways to hear new opinions and vantage points that we strongly disagree with. And accepting how complicated life is, even if we wish it were different. It might help to resist the urge to find easy answers and to be especially suspicious of simple answers when they exonerate us or confirm our own biases. Whether the us is ourselves as individuals, our church, our country, or our most cherished beliefs, blame tries to establish certainty. And life is inherently full of uncertainty and full of doubt. All of this is hard. Resisting the urge to declare who's to blame and sitting with uncertainty and complexity instead is hard. Accepting that we as individuals or we as a country, we as those who hold a particular political opinion or belong to a certain social class or ethnic group, accepting that we don't have all the answers is hard. We may not ever be able to find the answers to a question. And that's hard, too. And the answer may be something that will be almost impossible to completely unravel. Accepting that our understanding is limited, and it almost is, or that we might even be part of the problem, can be hard. Being willing to interrupt that very human rush to judgment and blame, our wish for a quick solution, is often hard. One of the gifts of our faith is that it suggests that there's always more to learn, always more to discover, always more sides to look at, and rarely any easy answers. May our faith be our guide.